Hi everyone, welcome back to English Digest. I'm Pat.
I'm Leah.
So for the last couple of days, we've been talking about the character of Arsène Lupin, this gentleman thief. We've talked about his influences, how he was created to sort of take and make some money off the popularity of Sherlock Holmes, and another character called A.J. Raffles, who was this gentleman thief created in the UK.
It makes me laugh when I hear gentleman thief, because how are you a gentleman and a thief? I guess we're going to talk about that a little bit today, right?
Yeah, that's kind of, it's become what's called an archetype. We'll explain that as we go through the article, but it's become this very common character that we see. So we're going to read about that. We're going to read about how Lupin and this character has influenced future stories by other authors. And that's all what we've got to cover in day three. So let's read through and learn more. Sherlock Holmes may have been Lupin's greatest antagonist, but the character of A.J. Raffles, created by Doyle's brother-in-law E.W. Hornung, arguably had a bigger impact on Lupin's development. The two both represent the archetype of the gentleman thief, an intelligent criminal with superb manners who steals more for amusement than for survival. Both men possess a strict moral code and won't kill or hurt others. They exclusively steal from the wealthy and tend to select targets that present a more interesting challenge. The gentleman thief character that originated with Raffles and Lupin has proved consistently popular and is now found in all kinds of media, from the stylish casino robbers of the Ocean's movies to the manga character Kaito Kid. Another manga that's directly inspired by Arsène Lupin is Lupin the Third. The series is named after its main character, supposedly a grandson of Arsène Lupin. Lupin the Third is a criminal mastermind and the world's greatest thief. He is also a ruthless professional killer, though when the manga series was adapted into a family-friendly anime, this aspect of his personality was dropped, and Lupin the Third was made more fun-loving and generous to others. Considering that Maurice LeBlanc never asked for permission to use Sherlock Holmes, it's ironic that Lupin the Third's creator, Monkey Punch, didn't ask for permission to use Lupin. Representatives of LeBlanc's literary estate did attempt legal action, but Japan didn't enforce certain copyrights for a while, and by the time it did, Lupin had entered the public domain. Perhaps it's just fate that a certain amount of creative borrowing took place to bring both of these well-known gentleman thieves to life.
All right, we're kicking in with day three, and we see Sherlock Holmes may have been Lupin's greatest antagonist, but the character of A.J. Raffles, created by Doyle's brother-in-law E.W. Hornung, arguably had a bigger impact on Lupin's development. Long sentence, a lot of information. Let's just break it up just a little bit. So Sherlock Holmes was Lupin's greatest antagonist, the one who went against him, right? You can antagonize somebody as a verb, and that means that you're going against them and probably almost bullying them. You can physically antagonize someone. You can mentally antagonize someone, which is an aggressive action. So as an antagonist, it means that you are their opposite. You are the one that goes against them and kind of fits in a perfect skill level, right? We know Sherlock Holmes and Lupin are supposed to be of an equal skill level, good and bad. But the character of A.J. Raffles, well, he is a little bit more important in Lupin's development, arguably, which means that people have discussed it and argued this point, being that Sherlock Holmes was great and everything, but A.J. Raffles, he was much more important for Lupin.
Yeah, in terms of what the character ended up being. Just another mention on the word antagonist, the opposite is protagonist.
Yes.
Yeah, so protagonist is basically the hero of the story, and the antagonist is the villain of the story.
Perfect.
It's a very simple way to look at it.
Yep.
So this character, A.J. Raffles, was created by Doyle's brother-in-law, Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes. So his brother-in-law started writing these stories about Raffles, and Conan Doyle actually was like, yeah, I like it. He wasn't like, Raffles has got a lot in common with Holmes. He's very smart, and he's a master of disguise. But in this case, Conan Doyle was like, no, you're my brother-in-law, you're writing these good stories, you're not directly stealing anything from me, so go ahead. I think you could make a success out of this.
I've got a random side note that I read about, which is that Raffles has a sidekick as well, and that is Bunny Manders, I think his name is. And there was a researcher who said that, if you remember, we talked about Oscar Wilde before. There's a researcher who said that A.J. Raffles and Bunny Manders are kind of based on Oscar Wilde and his partner, Lord Alfred Douglas, I think it is. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting link to something we talked about a few months ago with Oscar Wilde.
So Hornung created this character, and Raffles is a gentleman thief. The two both represent the archetype of the gentleman thief. And a gentleman thief, as the article says, is an intelligent criminal with superb manners who steals more for amusement than for survival. So let's look at the word archetype first. It can just mean a typical example of something, but in literature, if we talk about a literature or a story archetype, it's a character that has a set of, like, common, you might say, traits, characteristics that are very easy to identify, that you know, okay, this character is this type of thing.
The hero.
The hero, the old guy who guides the hero,
the
hero's
virgin.
Girl.
Young girl, yeah.
Yeah, the Dark Lord villain who tries to capture him.
These can all be archetypes.
Yeah, and Sherlock Holmes is pretty much the archetype of the great detective.
Right, exactly.
And Raffles and Lupin are kind of the archetype of the gentleman thief.
With superb manners, so it means that they've had a proper upbringing. Superb means excellent or perfect, just top manners. It means they know how to act in society. They know how to blend in high society. And these kinds of characters, these gentlemen thieves, they steal more for amusement, so for fun, right, to entertain themselves than for survival. They don't need the money. They're just doing this to play around. And I have to do another aside to a movie that is probably not the best movie ever, but I really like it for a couple of things in it, called Plunkett and McLean, where you get Johnny Lee Miller, who was married to Angelina Jolie and played Sherlock Holmes before and was in Trainspotting, and Robert Carlyle, who was the villain in Bond movies and was in Trainspotting and has been in a lot of things. And these two guys try to turn themselves into gentlemen thieves. And one of my favorite parts of the movie is when they go and attack a carriage and a French man comes out, and because they are gentlemen thieves, they're supposed to be able to speak French, of course, because these are part of the superb manners you have. And so I think it's Johnny Lee Miller tries to speak French, and the Frenchman says, "Stop, you can murder me, but don't murder my language." And it's just the best line ever in a movie, anyway. Gentlemen thieves.
Yeah, so these gentlemen thieves, they would rob from the rich. We'll mention that in a moment. Both men, so Lupin and Raffles, possess a strict moral code and won't kill or hurt others. So they're not like hard criminals.
Bad guys.
Yeah, going to shoot up a bank, and if someone gets in the way, they'll plug them with their gun and kill them and to get them out of the way. They won't hurt people. They have a strict moral code. A code, in this case, it's your guiding thing of this is right, this is wrong, and I will follow this. This is telling me what I should do morally, what is good and what is bad every step of the way. And it's a strict code. So Raffles has these rules that he lives by, like, I'm not going to steal from these kind of people. I'm only going to steal from, you know, people who aren't very nice to others. I won't steal from kind people who give to charity. I'll only steal if it's a challenge. You know, I'm not going to take the easy stuff.
The fact that you're saying these, you're stating these things, you could almost imagine he has a list written down where he has all of his rules. These gentlemen thieves, they exclusively steal from the wealthy and tend to select targets that present a more interesting challenge. So exclusively here means only, without any kind of other option. They will only steal from the wealthy. You think of something being exclusive, it just means it's fancy, but here it's a different meaning. It means it excludes everybody except for the wealthy, and they will exclusively steal from those people. And yeah, they look for the folks who are a little bit more interesting. And of course, that writes out as a good story. If you have a more difficult person to steal from, then of course you're going to have a much more interesting story to read, right? It's not just the guy that you met on the street and you're like, hey, come have a drink with me, and you steal from him. It's not, that'd be boring.
No, it's the one who says, no thief will ever break into my heavily guarded mansion and steal my famous painting.
Ocean's 11, right?
Yeah.
You got that kind of guy. Nobody will ever steal from me.
Yeah, and we'll kind of come back to the Ocean's 11 in a moment, because we see the gentleman thief character that originated with Raffles and Lupin has proved consistently popular and is now found in all kinds of media, from the stylish casino robbers of the Ocean's 11 movies, or Ocean's movies, to the manga character Kaito Kid. So Raffles and Lupin, they were the origin of the gentleman thief character. It hadn't really existed. There'd been sort of hints. Sherlock Holmes did occasionally burgle to get evidence from people, and there were other characters in the past who would steal, like those stories about criminals and how good they were, but they weren't really gentlemen in the same way as these two, Raffles and Lupin. So they were the origin.
This is where they solidified the character, the archetype, right?
Yeah, this is when this character, this is the time period, these are the characters that really made this gentleman thief something that everybody knew about. And it proved popular. People love reading these kind of thief stories. And so they're now found in media. Yeah, people like these stories. They want to read about kind of people who break the law, but they do it for the right reasons in the good way, like Robin
Hood.
And
they're not really bad guys.
Yeah, they have a code. They don't kill. They don't hurt. They don't, you know, make victims of innocent people.
They're funny oftentimes as
well. Yeah, great manners, good wit.
When you get into the stylish casino robbers of the Ocean's movies, it's constantly a banter back and forth with different members of the group. They're always making jokes and everything's very funny. Casino robbers, so robbers of casinos, people who go in and steal money from a casino. You can imagine a casino, a place where you go for gambling, has to have quite a lot of money on hand, because they have to pay out money. They also win a lot of money, and they have to store it somewhere. So it would be a great place to rob, to steal money from, right? If you're a robber, someone who steals money, as we talked about before, we had the burglar. This is a robber. That doesn't necessarily mean a private residence that you're stealing from, but a robber might go into a casino, into a public place, and go and rob something. And you can imagine a casino has got a lot of security up to protect itself from being robbed.
Yeah, so these guys are stylish. You know, they wear nice suits, they talk well, they, you know, they look cool. That's why people like these characters. And Raffles and Lupin, they dressed well, they wore suits, they, you know, they went to fancy places and ate good food.
Probably.
Yeah. So that's one example of why the, you know, and those movies were recent, you know, in the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
Ocean's 11, 12, 13, Ocean's 8, the remake. And then there's another gentleman thief here, the manga character Kaito Kid. Manga, of course, is the Japanese form of comic book. It's the manga is the comic book version rather than any like animated cartoon version.
And Kaito Kid is along the same line.
Yeah,
gentleman thief.
Now we're going to take a short break here. We'll talk a bit more about another kind of manga that's based on Lupin in a moment. But right now we're going to listen to our Chinese teacher.
听众朋友大家好，我是安娜。我们从前天开始带大家看了一个亚森罗平的经典故事。然后昨天我们说亚森罗平啊，这个作者 LeBlanc 其实当时是受到杂志社的编辑的委托，希望能够创造出一个这样的角色，有点类似像福尔摩斯啦，或者是像 AJ Rivals 这样冒险故事这些绅士窃贼的角色。那角色创造出来之后呢，因为在亚森罗平故事当中有时候会出现福尔摩斯这个角色，所以好像亚森罗平啊一出版之后呢就非常的 popular， 非常的受欢迎。那我们今天呢再来仔细看一下这个亚森罗平的故事有没有去影响到后面其他的作品呢？其实是有的哦。不过我们回归到文章啊，第一段告诉我们，就是说 福尔摩斯当然经常出现在亚森罗平一系列故事当中了，但是这个道尔啊，这个道尔的妹婿，道尔的妹婿呢，他创造出来的另外一个 AJ Rivals， 其实对亚森罗平这角色的发展很大，因为他们都是属于很经典的 Gentleman Thief， 也就是绅士窃贼。什么是绅士窃贼呢？就是智慧型的犯罪，也就是他们的礼仪出色，而且他们的偷窃主要是为了消遣，而不是为了偷东西生存哦。我们在第一段呢、有看到四个关系子句，这四个关系子句第一个就出现在第一句。第一句是什么的关系子句呢？它是个简化的关系子句，逗点之后的 created 前面可以插入 who was， 当然这个 who 指的就是 AJ Rivals 这个角色咯。那接下来的第二个关系子句呢，就出现在第二句的地方。第二句是一个限定用法关系子句，这里就比较好找了，从 who 一直到句尾可以左右挂号起来。但是其实这个 who 啊，指涉的是比较前面的一点点的字，其实关键就是 criminal 罪犯。那当然先行词 criminal 后面带的是 with superb manners， 所以其实画起来的话是破折号一直到 manners， 这整个地方都可以说是 who 的一个先行词。那第三个关系子句呢，就出现在第四句。第四句的关系子句从逗点之后 target 之后的 that 这个地方到句尾，那 that 代替的是前面的 targets， 这个目标呢，目标怎样呢？ That present a more interesting challenge， 偷窃主要是为了消遣哦，而不是为了生存。当然最后面呢，第五句这个地方就出现了我们刚刚说的第四个关系子句，那先行词就是前面的主词 The gentleman thief character， 关系子句从 that 一直到 Lupin 这个地方可以左右挂号。所以不管说是这个 rivals 或者是 Lupin， 不管说是这一个莱佛士啦，或者是亚森罗平啦，像这种绅士窃贼这种角色大家都很喜欢。影响到后面有哪些作品呢？比如说像瞒天过海一系列的电影，甚至像是漫画角色我们知道很熟悉的这个怪盗基德，其实都是受到亚森罗平作品的影响哦。
All right, guys, we're going to take a break for just a moment and then we'll be right back with you. So now we're going into another manga. We talked about a manga earlier with the Kaido Kid, I guess. And now we've got another manga that's directly inspired by Arsène Lupin is Lupin the Third. Okay, that doesn't give us a whole lot of information that we can kind of describe more to you. So let's move directly into the second sentence here. It says the series is named after its main character, Lupin, supposedly a grandson of Arsène Lupin. But that is really interesting. I did not know that. So he is the third because he is the grandson, right? Or the almost the no, I guess grandson would be right.
Yeah, if they all have the same name, you'd have Arsène Lupin Senior, Arsène Lupin Junior, and then Arsène Lupin the third. Yeah, some families do that. They keep exactly the same name in the families as a kind of a tradition. So normally we see that kind of name, you know, the Roman numerals for kings, like our king right now is Charles the Third,
because Henry
VIII. Yeah, it's the third king called Charles.
But it's not necessarily always the case that it was his name that he was born with. It was his regal name that he is given upon becoming king.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a manga series. So it's not just a single one-off comic. It's a bunch of comics about the same character and his adventures that are published, you know, once every couple of months, once every year, however it is published. It's just a running set of stories featuring the same character or characters and their adventures.
And supposedly, right? Supposedly, he's the grandson of Arsène Lupin. Why do they use the word supposedly? Well, it's assumed, but it's not definitely the case. Maybe in the story, it's not 100% clear that he is the grandson, or maybe he is, as a master of disguise, pretending to be the grandson of Lupin.
It's a Japanese comic book and the guy is Japanese, so he's going to have to imagine, like, okay, how is this French thief's grandson Japanese.
This could happen.
Grown up in Japan. But that's why we say supposedly. That is who he is supposed to be. So Lupin III is a criminal mastermind and the world's greatest thief.
Dun, dun, dun. Yep, new thief.
Sounds like Lupin. So he's a mastermind. So that means he's incredibly intelligent when it comes to planning crimes. If you're the mastermind behind something, you're the guy with the plan. You have the strategy. You know what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And you've planned every detail of this whole thing. And it's often used with criminal mastermind because
Absolutely. It's
the kind of guy who would plan all these crimes. If you know the Sherlock Holmes stories, you'll know Professor Moriarty is the criminal mastermind.
Right. And he is also a ruthless professional killer. Though when the manga series was adapted into a family-friendly anime, this aspect of his personality was dropped and Lupin III was made more fun-loving and generous to others. This seems like a very big change in character that we've got here. So he starts out as a ruthless professional killer. If you're ruthless, it means you have absolutely no heart that's stopping you from doing things that are quite evil or painful or despicable in terms of like being able to kill somebody for money. That's a professional killer. So if you're ruthless, you have no sentiment or any, you know, emotional consideration for that person you're about to kill. And that's kind of scary. So I don't know how they turn him into a fun-loving guy, but they do it through changing things into a family-friendly anime.
Yeah, anime is the cartoon form of a manga that you would watch on TV. You
know,
it's the TV version. So we use anime for that, manga for the comic book. So I guess the creators just decided, okay, let's make an anime, but we need to sell a lot of these to TV networks, so we can't have it all be dark and with ruthless
killers.
So let's make it a fun, friendly kind of criminals having funny adventures kind of stories. So we'll change this guy's personality. This aspect, this part of him, this being a ruthless killer, was dropped. It was removed. He is no longer a killer in the cartoon version.
You know what's really fascinating with this whole Lupin personality archetype permeation is that it's all been created to make the biggest amount of financial impact. So, I mean, they're changing him from this ruthless killer, which might have worked for a whole bunch of people who like their, you know, like their mangas and they want this dark, scary guy. But as they move it into anime, they're like, we need to make more money off of this. It's interesting the way the financial pull really changes a character or develops a character.
Now, you might remember yesterday we talked about LeBlanc, the creator of Lupin, originally putting Sherlock Holmes in a bunch of his stories, again, to make a bit more money. So the next paragraph kind of goes into this a bit more and says, considering that Maurice LeBlanc never asked for permission to use Sherlock Holmes, it's ironic that Lupin III's creator, Monkey Punch, which is his kind of publishing name, of course, didn't ask for permission to use Lupin. It was just like, okay, this is a cool idea. I'll steal it.
I'm just going to do it just the same way you did. So
yeah.
It's ironic. It's kind of humorous in that kind of
strange way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's ironic because it's kind of, okay, this guy did it, and so this guy has it done to him. There we go. It's kind of, it's contrary to what you might expect people to ask for permission, but they don't, and this happens in a funny way.
And once again, just like with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's attorneys, representatives of LeBlanc's literary estate did attempt legal action, but Japan didn't enforce certain copyrights for a while, and by the time it did, Lupin had entered the public domain. That one's kind of interesting. So once again, representatives of LeBlanc's literary estate, that's probably lawyers. His literary estate would be the works of literature that he has put together over the years and that have been passed down over, you know, into his family, into his descendants, right? Estate here not meaning a physical building, it's his literary works.
Yeah, it's all the kind of things he wrote, the characters he created, the copyrights he had, you know, any notes, maps, original like manuscripts he did.
Things that would make money probably, right?
But yeah, because it also includes film rights and translation rights. And so if you want to use that, you have to get permission. and the literary estate and the representatives are the people who make sure that nobody's stealing this stuff.
And if they do try to, then they will attempt legal action. So they'll try to take them to court and say, hey, you owe us money. But Japan didn't enforce those copyrights or certain copyrights. So it didn't say, yes, we're absolutely going to follow what you have said. And enforce here means to... Well, actually, I don't know a good way to describe enforce.
To make sure a law happens, really.
To force it,
like,
right?
There is a law, and you make sure people follow it. That is enforcing the law. So,
and then they didn't do that in Japan for a while, and by the time they did, hey, too bad. This is in public domain. So guess what? Lupin, what happened originally with Lupin and Sherlock Holmes, it turned the tables, and it happened to Lupin instead.
Yeah, and that's why we conclude the article by saying, perhaps it's just fate that a certain amount of creative borrowing took place to bring both of these well-known gentlemen thieves to life. So creative borrowing is in inverted commas. It's in quote marks to show that what we really mean is theft.
Stealing.
It is straight up theft.
But which would be the perfect thing for a master thief to
do.
Yes,
but
that's
of course,
what we're talking about here.
A gentleman thief wouldn't say, oh, I stole it. He'd say, I just took it from him. He wasn't using it.
Borrowed it. Yes. I don't believe he was busy using it at that moment.
I'll just
creatively borrow this car.
So it's kind of funny that all these stories are about well-mannered thieves, and to bring them to the page, a lot of thieving took place.
Yeah, I actually really like the irony of this. As we mentioned earlier, it is very funny in a strange kind of like ha-ha what sort of way.
Yeah, that so many thieves were the result of so much thievery.
Thievery.
Yeah, it was a bit of fun to end things up, because that does bring us to the end of our article. We're going to hand over to our Chinese teacher one more time, and then we'll be back to wrap things up.
还有一个呢，则是漫画的鲁邦三世。那鲁邦三世这一系列啊，主要就是用这个角色来命名。鲁邦三世据说呢是亚森罗平他的孙子哦，他是一个犯罪大师，也是世界上最伟大的窃贼之一了。不过他是一个很冷酷的杀手。可是当鲁邦三世被制作成动画的时候，因为适合全家观看，那么他的职业杀手这个特色就被去除掉，然后呢就把它改成比较爱好乐趣啦，然后这个慷慨于人啊，这些特点。不过在这里我们要来看一下，在文章第二段的地方，这第二段的第四句从 he 这边开始，我们要特别抓出来看，因为这个句子看起来很长。那很长的原因是什么呢？我们先简化一下，从前面开始看， he is also a ruthless professional killer， 他是一个冷酷的职业杀手。逗点之后的 though，虽然如何，那虽然后面这个让步子句就很长了，我们先从 when 一直到最句尾的 others 这个地方，至少要先认知出虽然有另外一个状况。那这个状况很长诶，这个状况是从 though 后面开始， when 代表一个时间，当被改编成合家可以欣赏的 anime 逗点动画的时候，This aspect, 这个面相，也就是杀人这个面相 was dropped, 就被丢弃，逗点 and, 而带了另外一个结果。这个鲁邦三世呢就被创造成为另外一个角色。好，所以这句话如果真的看不懂的话，主要的原因是因为它这个 though 后面的让步子句有一点长。好，那接下来我们就最后看到啦。我们昨天有说这个像亚森罗平啦，还有福尔摩斯，其实他们这个创作的年限都已经超过50年，所以是没有所谓的版权。但是呢，鲁邦三世当时很特别，鲁邦三世的创作作者这个日本人啊，他当时也没有请求这个亚森罗平作者 LeBlanc 的使用许可，就把他的角色放进来。当然这个 LeBlanc 文学遗产的代表当时曾经试图采取一些法律行动，那后来就刚好过了50年，也就变成亚森罗平后来也进入公共领域，也没有所谓的版权。好，所以很特别哦。那现在呢，大家其实可以在各种不同的创作当中都可以看到这些经典的代表。不过我们最后面啊，还是要看一下最后一段第三段这个地方，第三段的第三句，也就是文章的最后一句， Perhaps It's just fade. That 一直到句尾，你大概会想说，哦，这边有一个关系子句，诶，没有诶。其实这里的 that 是一个无意义的连接词，这个连接词后面加的是完整的子句哦。句子本来其实很短， perhaps it's just fate. 或许这就是命运吧。什么样的命运？命运怎么安排？ That 连接词连接后面整个完整的句子，有主词，有动词。这个命运就是其实大家都可以创意借用，让这两位著名的绅士窃贼都可以重生，让现在的读者都可以看到他们的故事。所以下次当你看到 that 的时候，要判断一下后面的句子有没有少主词或者是受词。如果有缺主词受词，它就是冠带，如果没有的话，其实它就是无意义的连接词，补充说明前面的这个名词，例如在这句话当中就是 fate。 如果你没有看过这些经典作品，或许可以找时间来看看哦。以上是我们今天的内容，我是安娜，我们下次见。
So that brings us to the end of our article about Arsène Lupin. We hope you've had a lot of fun. I think we have.
I think we have. I hope you have too.
one thing about these gentleman thief stories is, as if you've seen the Ocean's 11, you'll be able to tell. Comedy and fun is a big part of them. You're not supposed to take these seriously, particularly.
Nope.
They're just a good laugh
and a good
read. It's a
little bit tongue-in-cheek and everything is a bit of a giggle as well, yes.
And so that was kind of why the article was written as it is, because it shows some of the funny side of the publishing industry and how things come to be.
And the creative borrowing.
Yes, that is all the time we have, though. Thanks for listening, everyone. For English Digest, I'm Pat.
I'm Leah.
And we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.